Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Because it's Monday morning, I hate this Monday morning. Can feel my head is drowning. I don't think I can make it. I'm half asleep, 'cause I still need 5 minutes just to look at the ceiling. But it's 8, so I gotta go. Or am I? Hey Siri, Minnesota at 9. That's kind of a long one.
I liked it. I was like, how sweet. That's how I felt this morning.
Oh, that's how I feel every morning of my entire life.
Honestly.
Every morning. That was Monday Morning by, I'm going to do my absolute best here, Kitsui Akira, Trifect, and Haya Kim.
Nice.
Well, Minnesota 99. Can you believe? And this is our last one ever. We're never going to do 100th.
Yeah. I know you guys were excited for 100, but we're actually never going to do one.
Uh-oh, pranking you. Sorry.
We like to keep you guys on your toes. And if we do another Minnesota, which don't freaking plan on it, it'll be 101.
Yeah, and we're going to do it in 10 years. And yeah. It still will be on opening night, but it's going to be 10 years after the fact.
Yeah, totally.
So, sorry.
Sorry.
Buckle up, kiddos.
Ooh, I know you see me standing here.
It's going to be on Zoe 101. That's what that movie said's going to be on. When I tell you, when I was editing our episode on New Directions, episode 101, and we talk about Zoe 101, I rewound it. Maybe this is conceited. Maybe this is narcissistic. I was crying. I was laughing so hard. I rewound that bit so many times.
I love that. If you can't make yourself laugh, what are you doing?
You saying that the New Directions performing the Zoe 101 theme song would be a big slay is very funny. Oh my gosh. Good. That's good.
Wow.
Well, welcome to Minnesota 101, everyone. Talking about Zoe 101, talking about Jamie Lynn Spears, talking about Victoria Justice. Who else is on that show?
I don't know. The Corey in the House is older brother.
Oh, you're so right. He was. Thank you. He was named like, no, wait, I don't know. I didn't watch Zoe 101. I don't know any of these people.
You didn't?
No. We talked about this already in episode 101, maybe.
Sorry, I probably pushed it out of my mind because that's so preposterous to me.
I think I have seen one episode from beginning to end of Zoe 101. And then I've seen like snippets of other stuff because it would like be on TV. But I've only actually sat through the pilot episode.
Yeah. I can't in good conscience recommend that anyone watch that show, frankly.
Why? It's not like the creator has ever done incredibly sketchy things and created a toxic work environment and mistreated the minors who worked for him.
Yeah, actually, you're right. It's not like that at all. Actually, everyone go watch it. Just kidding. Hey. Honestly, reading I'm Glad My Mom Died, I knew that like sketchy shit had gone down in Nickelodeon, but like reading about it in that book, I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is where I like to pretend that I am so smart and evolved because I didn't watch Dan Schneider shows, but it wasn't because of ethical reasons, because none of us knew any of that stuff at the time. It was literally because I didn't think they were funny.
Honestly.
That's a lie. I watched like the Amanda Show and like all that. But when it was like Drake and Josh, iCarly era, I was never in that bag really.
Yeah.
But it was not, I would like to repeat, it was not because I knew better, because none of us knew anything.
No.
It was simply because I kind of thought that they just were not my brand of humor, so I didn't watch them.
Totally.
I was on that Phil the Future train. Phil the Future, yeah. Classic TV. Love that show.
I love Phil the Future so much. Even though it was about a boy, I felt like Ali Mashaka was enough a part of that show that I...
And Pim?
Literally, that I gave it enough of my my attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I know anyone who loved Phil the Future as much as you did. And I say that to say that's awesome.
On a holiday through history, their final destination was a mystery. Something on their time machine half blown, and they ended up right here in our time zone. And now he's Phil del Futuro. One of my favorite jokes on that show is when Vice Principal Neil Hackett gets fired because Pim, honestly, this whole plot is very funny. Pim wins a like fun
That's the
little
sister, right? That's
yes, what you're saying. Yes. Who was my favorite character. Pim wins a like fun little school competition where you get to be principal for a day, but then she finds out a loophole that the school didn't think it through, so that she actually, as principal, can enact a rule in the school where she becomes principal forever. And so now, like, she is principal and is ruling the school with an iron fist. And it's very funny. And she fires Vice Principal Neil Hackett. And she's having a job applications for a new vice principal. And Vice Principal Neil Hackett comes to interview for the job in disguise as someone else. And he's wearing a bald cap to disguise himself. But he's already bald, so it's just a bald cap over his bald head. And that, to like 10-year-old me, was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. It's very good.
I love that. That's
very
awesome.
Good. Also, Vice Principal Neil Hackett then shows up in Community as the doppelganger.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, the doppelganger.
Yeah, yeah. He also shows up in How I Met Your Mother as not Moby. He just made a career out of looking like other people who are more famous than him. Well, let's kick off this 101st minisode. Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Ian Allred, and I was born 101 years ago when we started doing this minisode, and here we are 101 years later still doing the minisode.
Wow.
And I am, for 101 more years, a mini-gleek.
Wow. But once 101 more years passes... You're not a mini-gleek anymore.
It'll end.
And
that's the expiration
date. I bet you're
date.
Wondering, hear me out. I bet you're wondering who's going to pick up that torch. And the answer is me, Lena Knatzer. In 101 years, I will start doing the mini-sode.
You haven't? I've been trying to get you to do the mini-sode for the last 101 years, and you're like, not yet.
not yet.
To keep doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
Not yet, not yet. But in 101 more
years... I know you think you're hearing me, but I'm actually not doing anything.
She's not. In 101 years, Lena will finally be in the minisode. We keep getting emails. It's like, it's so weird that you both host the podcast, but then Lena is not in the minisodes at all. And I'm like, you guys, we know she can't do it for another 101 years.
No,
we're going to switch off.
You guys. Yeah.
She'll go to prison.
You guys, I can't go to prison. I really just don't want to.
Do you ever think about if someone just like ran across, like came across our TikTok at random and they were like, I'll just start on the most recent episode. And they started on an episode like this and they were like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, no. Honestly, all the time. And that's the thing that I really don't think that those people make it far. Well, maybe they do. But I know that a lot of people who start our podcast start at the beginning. And the people who like go the distance and listen to like 101 episodes in 3 weeks are starting at the beginning.
Yeah. Because the way that we just lie.
I know.
And then just continue forward is honestly admirable. And I like it.
Like
speaking of, let's start this 101st minisode. It's number 101.
Let's kick things off with story.
Hello, LPC and Ian. I have the most thoughts that anyone has ever had about the Sam Sadie's plot, so sorry not sorry, but buckle in.
Hashtag sorry not sorry.
My apologies. I have been and will continue to be an outspoken hater for overcorrecting toward aggressive pro-sex ideology in media, especially for teenagers. And Glee specifically has been a big perpetrator of exactly that. Remember when Finchel and Clayne were both considering having sex for the first time, and both Finn and Kurt were like, actually, I'm not feeling this right now, and then both couples ended up having sex by the end of the episode? Almost every time a character has had a, I don't know that I want to have sex right now, moment in Glee so far, the resolution has been, actually, you need to get over that, because you do want to have sex right now. For God's sake, the entire Jurley relationship can basically be summarized as, if you are 16 years old and not ready to have sex yet, your boyfriend will reluctantly allow this and then cheat on you at the first opportunity because you can't actually expect someone to be okay not having sex. Even the iconic moment of Quinn Fabre teasing out her clear lesbianism by sleeping with Santana kind of bugs me, because the last time we saw Quinn as a character address her thoughts towards sex, she was traumatized from her first sexual experience resulting in teen pregnancy, and was in a staunchly no-fly zone for those shenanigans. Then she's off to college, and she's sleeping with professors and having casual hookups with Santana out of nowhere. And I will admit that some of the pro having sex resolutions have completely made sense for the characters at the time. I'm not here to argue that no one should ever have sex in real life or on TV, but the frequency with which this specific issue has come up in Glee with the same resolution frustrates me so much. Which finally leads us to the Sam Sadies of it all. I have a read on Mercedes that I don't know everyone will agree with, but hear me out. I am an asexual lesbian myself, and though I realized I was a lesbian relatively young, I didn't truly realize I was asexual until recent years. I was also raised Christian, and there was a period of my life where, even as an out and proud lesbian, I was still toting the line, I want to wait until marriage to have sex. And I have known other asexual people with the exact same experience, because somehow it's easier to say, for religious reasons, I will not be boning today. Rather than, I think I feel differently about sex than my peers do. So I propose to you, Mercedes Jones on the asexuality spectrum. She knows that she loves Sam, ignoring that they've only really been dating for a few weeks. She feels like she's no longer at an age where I'm not ready yet is an acceptable answer, even though that is always actually an acceptable answer. She thinks long and hard on it and tries to resolve herself to having sex with her boyfriend, but she still can't. So she comes up with the only explanation that will give her time without provoking more questions from other people or from her own subconscious. Celibate for religious reasons. Honestly, for me, this reading doesn't change anything else about the episode. I still really enjoy Sam needing to take a beat to process this, because I think sex is something that means something different and has different importance to everyone, and I am a big supporter of open, honest communication and reflection about that. If Sam needed to have sex to have a romantic relationship, then Mercedes would not be the right romantic partner for him. And I am also so, so glad for these two characters that Sam decides that he does want a relationship with Mercedes, even if sex is not on the table. Partially so that we can finally see a positive relationship where one partner does not want to sex. And partially because I am also a diehard Sam Sadie shipper and I want them to be together. Anyway, all of this to say that I really enjoy this plot in this episode, but I am also now headcanning Mercedes on the asexuality spectrum. I apologize for testing your patience with this long email. Winky face. Forever recovering Gleek, story, she, her. So, and that's what you really missed recently, covered The Power of Madonna. So that I've had that episode on the brain. And I was like, what? A different episode of Glee. That there would be an episode about all these characters wondering, like thinking about having sex, but not being sure if they're ready, and then coming to the conclusion that they aren't ready and that being okay. Because that's like the whole theme of that episode. I mean, not the whole theme of that episode, yeah. But that's like one of the themes of that episode. And story, like you said, the biggest perpetrator of Glee swinging the opposite way to me as well is the first time, where it's like, mm-hmm. One, Blaine and Rachel are being pushed into losing their virginity by the director of their school play. And that's never brought into question. And then both Kurt and Finn are like, I don't really know. And then they all end up having sex with each other. Mm-hmm. We don't need to retread over that. But I still think that one of them should have had sex. One couple should have. One couple shouldn't have. And shown like, you know, if you're ready, it's okay to be having sex. If you're not ready, it's okay to have that boundary. But
yeah.
Oh, well. I'm glad that Mercedes is putting up that boundary in this episode.
Yeah. I also love I don't know. I just think it's interesting, this show's relationship to sex, in that it's a idea of, you know, the people who think they don't want sex are actually just wrong, you know, and like ignoring that some people just never have sexual urges, mm-hmm. and that's okay, or don't have any desire to have sex, and that's totally fine. And this show, like, for being about like young people growing up and like young people in the LGBT community, I think, like, you know, they ignore this bit. And like, so often they're just like, oh, these people are silly and wrong for not wanting to have sex. And just, I don't know, like, it's totally fine to not want to do that at all.
And I don't know these people. I know it's shocking.
I've never met them.
I know that we all think that I'm roommates with Ryan Murphy and Ian Brennan and Brad Falchuk.
Yes.
I like to address those rumors head on. They've been spreading a lot, and I like to say that's not true.
I've been the one spreading them.
But I don't know these people. But I do wonder if part of it is Ryan Murphy growing up as a gay man in like the 80s, mm-hmm. where it was essentially said, you know, one, for queer people in all of history, it was kind of like your sex lives were demonized, and a lot of society was like, sex, like the sex that you would be doing is gross and evil. Yeah. But especially in like the 80s with the AIDS epidemic, and it was like, this is God punishing you. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that for Ryan Murphy, I'm not sure. I wonder if for Ryan Murphy, he just got so much messaging growing up that was like, your sexual urges are evil and bad, mm-hmm. and dirty and gross. And so he's trying to, you know, heal his inner child and help other people who feel the same way by being like, no, it's okay. And as long as it's with someone that's like consenting and wants to do it and you're being safe, like, go for it.
No, and I totally get that.
I wonder if that's why Glee swings so like everyone should be having sex, is because Ryan Murphy is trying to shout out, like, help people who had his same experience. Yeah. And I do think that's an important thing to be doing. Like, I do think it's important thing to kind of to try and destigmatize. That is the right word. Okay. Try to destigmatize queer sex and show mm-hmm. that like it's not evil and gross and bad. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be like, this, why does he do this? He's so dumb. Because I totally understand that. And I do think that that's a good thing. I agree with you, Story. It just swings so far that it ignores. And like you said, Lena, it then ignores people who it's like, no, I don't think that sex is evil and bad. I just am not interested in it. Yeah, like, it's just not my thing. Yeah. But that's why I really like this plot line, is because it is them, you know, finally having a character be like, no, actually, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
And it's not Mercedes being like, oh, it would be gross and bad. It's her like, I feel like personally, it's not something that I want to be doing right now with you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Story, thank you so much for this message. Up next, we've got a message from Billy.
Hey, Ian and Lena. I said it like that because it is in like three times bigger font than the rest of the email and in bold. The rest of this is at a normal volume. Don't worry. So I toyed with a bit. The first words on this are first things first.
You think we're going to go to first things first on the podcast.
This is what I was going to do. First things first on the podcast. I'm in the UK and I listen to it at work, and I truly, it makes my workday better. I'm 24 and have been a Glee since I was 11 years old, and Glee is now the main topic of conversation between me and my 14-year-old cousin. Look at that.
Keep going.
Anyway, let the episode love tested. I think it's a super funny episode. It's falling apart. Iggy, I'm sorry. And I agree with most of your takes on it. TBH. And something you said made me realize yet another continuity issue with Glee, where you said Artie has been objectifying girls since he was 14. I'm so fancy. You already know I'm in the fast lane from LA to Tokyo. That was painful. It fell apart at the end. but now we'll go back and do it normally. First things first, I'm the realist. Love the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm in the UK, international listener, et cetera, et cetera.
International listener!
I listen to it at work, and it truly makes my workday better. I'm 24 and have been a Gleek since I was 11 years old. And Glee is now the main topic of conversation between me and my 14-year-old cousin. Look at that, Glee bringing families together. Anyway, loved the episode. I love Tested. I think it's a super funny episode, and I agree with most of your takes on it, to be honest. And something you said made me realize yet another continuity issue with Glee, where you said Artie has been objectifying girls since he was 14. Assuming you're referring to his age at the beginning of Glee, since he was supposed to be a freshman. And it made me remember that Artie is canonically 16 in season 1 of Glee. In Wheels, he tells Tina his car accident happened at 8 years old. And later on, Tina says, it's not fair, you've had 8 years of practice, when he wins the wheelchair race they have on their date, making him canonically 16. Do you think the writers decided his car accident held them back in school? Or is it a classic case of they don't have a show Bible? It's a blessing and a curse to be able to rattle off Glee continuity errors off the top of my head. And I feel like the only place someone will appreciate my ramblings about the non-existent continuity of Glee is here. Thanks for listening. Much love, Billy, they, them. Billy, first and foremost, thank you for that rap. That was impressive.
Billy, you're such a good rapper.
The flow was immaculate. It all totally fit. None of it was shoehorned in to try and fit the rhythm.
Not at all. But honestly, you are right, Billy. When you say that your continuity talk is going to fit somewhere, it fits here. And thanks for sharing it, because this is the shit I like to talk about, that Glee doesn't know what it's talking about ever. So thanks for bringing it up.
I'm certain it's a show Bible issue. I'm certain they have no memory that they said that he was 16 in season one.
I'm sure even if they did, they don't care, you know?
Yeah. But the option that you give Billy, which is that Artie got in this car crash that left him paralyzed from the waist down, and you know, he probably had to miss a lot of school for that, and he got held back. That totally works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's what happened.
Yeah.
But I am certain that the actual reason is simply that the writers forgot.
Yeah.
They just spaced on
it. That's one of my favorite things about Glee, is some of this stuff is so open-ended that we can really put any meaning we want, because the writers don't know what they're saying half the time.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about continuity issues. In season one of How I Met Your Mother, my favorite character, Robin Scherbatsky, tells Ted that she never played team sports. It was hard for her because she was an only child. And then we find out later that she played a ton of hockey growing up and that she has a sister. So, I mean, Glee is worse.
So you tell me.
Yeah, Glee is worse than most.
Yeah.
But it is pretty common for shows in their first season to say stuff and then regret that they said that stuff. And so they just pretend it was never said later on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I get that. I couldn't imagine, like, especially making a TV show. Like, that's something that's not a 2-hour long movie. That's like thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours. And especially a show like that, or like Glee, that's an ensemble cast, where it's like, you can't have everything figured out. And maybe, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I think it'd be good if we added this later for Robin, you know, even though you said this. I don't know. It's hard. I can't do it. That's why I don't. But Billy, thanks so much for this message. You're such a good rapper, Billy. For real.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Up next, we've got a message from Grace.
Hi, Ian and Lena. I want to preface this email by saying that I did not actually rewatch the episode, so please forgive me if I'm off on some of the details or tones of the individual scenes. I just find this episode extremely difficult to watch personally. Long story short, I've been an athlete for my entire life, but due to a recent, thankfully minor, back injury, I've had to adjust my relationship with food, exercise, and body image expectations. I wanted to talk about a potential reason why food is such a large part of the Clayne storyline. It's definitely been a long-running joke on this podcast that Blaine is Ryan Murphy's dream boyfriend for his character insert fanfiction, and that Blaine is really just Kurt's accessory, and unfortunately, I think that has made actual Blaine storylines extremely difficult. Most of the show's attempts to make Blaine an actual person cause conflict in his relationship with Kurt because Blaine steps out of the previous Clayne dynamic. But in this episode, Blaine's life revolving around Kurt actually becomes relevant because it's Kurt who steps out of alignment. I think that Blaine is the type of person who needs to be needed, and he also finds his self-worth in external validation. But Kurt is the type of person who needs to feel wanted. He struggles feeling dependent on others. But because Kurt is receiving external validation from his Niata classmates and feeling wanted, he doesn't need that validation from Blaine anymore. So when Blaine pulls away from Kurt, it's because he doesn't feel needed. But then Kurt feels unwanted by his partner, so he in turn pushes Blaine away because he's trying to prove that he doesn't need him. Now, if Blaine is pulling away from Kurt and Kurt is pushing Blaine away, how is Blaine going to react? Blaine is a freshman in college. He has been dating Kurt since he was a sophomore in high school. For about 3 years, Blaine has made his entire life about Kurt, even when they were broken up. And those 3 years, high school and your freshman year of college, are extremely formative. You can learn so much about yourself in that time, but Blaine hasn't focused on himself, and I don't think he knows who he is without Kurt. With the distance between them that started when he moved out, he has been forced to confront that fact. And he lands on his body image because his weight gain and Kurt's fitness coincides with this. There have also been past events in their relationship that might contribute to this as well. Since Blaine is not an actual person, most of Kurt's initial interest in him was based on his physical appearance and his singing voice. He's definitely made comments about Blaine's looks in past episodes, like Big Brother. And remember that email from Dance with Somebody commenting on Kurt putting bronzer in Blaine's moisturizer? It's me. Hi, I'm the problem, it's me. Kurt literally said he thought Blaine should be more tan. Clearly there is evidence to show that Kurt puts a lot of stock into Blaine's physical appearance. This all plays into why Blaine is so insecure about his appearance and his weight. There's already been distance in his relationship with Kurt since he arrived in New York, and now Blaine realizes that he doesn't feel confident in his body anymore, so what is Kurt going to think? And while I appreciate that Blaine recognizes that his mindset is unhealthy for both him and for his relationship with Kurt, I just think that the true root of their issues goes unsolved. This crazy diet means that Kurt isn't supporting Blaine as he tries to become his own person and find his place in New York. It means that Kurt is supporting Blaine's attempt to be more attractive or desirable. So Blaine is going to continue comparing his body to other people's and having an unhealthy relationship with food because in his mind, he got Kurt's approval and support through this diet, not through being open and honest in the relationship. Blaine needs therapy, not a crazy cleanse. And I think cleanses are great if they're done in a healthier way and for the right reason, aka to feel healthier or better, not to try and lose your freshman 15. Anyways, sorry this email was so long. I hope it makes something resembling sense to you guys. Consensual forehead kisses, Grace. P.S. Speaking of Dance with Somebody, now that Kurt has become a waiter, I hope people have snapped their fingers at him so he can learn the error of his ways, because learning that he did that to people canceled him in my eyes. Kurt Hummel is over party. People who snap at waiters, the worst.
The worst.
Terrible.
I fully forgot he did that. Oh my gosh. Honestly, I forgot a lot of the things he did that you bring up in this message.
What, are you not keeping a show Bible, Lena?
I'm not. That's why I'm not a writer.
Grace, this email is awesome. I love you pointing out that basically the resolution of the fight is that Blaine decides to go on a diet. And Kurt is like, good for you. You go on that diet. I'll help you go on that diet. And for all these reasons you lay out in Blaine's mind, that is, oh, we fixed our relations problems because I'm going to get quote unquote hotter. Yeah. And it actually is just like, yeah, they're not fighting anymore, but it's just going to continue Blaine's body issues and self-image issues and not resolve the actual cause of their problems in their relationship. I also like, I like your insight into Kurt and Blaine's attachment styles, dare I say. Blaine's got that anxious attachment. He needs to feel needed. He needs validation. He needs to feel like his partner loves him. Kurt's got that avoidant attachment. He feels suffocated. He pushes people away. He wants people to chase after him. Mm-hmm. And as attached, the book I read on attachment styles one time says, the hardest relationship to make work is an anxious and avoidant relationship.
Yeah.
Because they are just constantly, the anxious person is constantly smothering the avoidant person. And the avoidant person is constantly trying to distance themselves from the anxious person. And they just drive each other crazy.
This email makes me feel some type of way. Just because I feel like I've like specifically forgotten so much of this about Kurt that now I'm remembering it and feeling very upset. I mean, I just think, like, you know, being in a relationship is so difficult, let alone being in a relationship with someone who, like, you know, wants to put you down like this. Oh my gosh, it just makes me sad. But I really appreciate your thoughts on this. And honestly, it has, like, I don't know. Yeah, I just appreciate this. And, like, I don't know. I have thoughts about this plot that are like weird and unresolved. And I mean, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is all like my own, like, I think I even said it in the maxi. I was like, I feel like my problems about this plot are just like my own problems as a watcher. And I appreciate hearing from someone that, like, you know, that I wasn't being silly about that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like,
if that makes sense.
Even if we didn't get this email, I don't think you were being silly regardless.
Oh, no. I don't think I was being, you know what I mean. But, yeah. Thank you. It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Grace, thanks so much for this message. Up next, we've got a message from Elizabeth.
Hi, Lena and Ian. Elizabeth here. It's been a while since I've emailed in, and I just wanted to say that I am really enjoying your perspective on season 5. This is my and a lot of other people's least favorite season, and usually discussions around it are very negative. And it's actually really nice to hear about what you're enjoying about the season, and even when you talk about the stuff you don't like, you talk about it in a fun, respectful, and thoughtful way that just makes listening or watching Best Friend of the Podcast so enjoyable. Hi, Elizabeth. We're waving at the camera. So if you're not a best friend of the podcast or a friend of the podcast, if you're not on a Patreon, then sorry, you can't see us waving.
Yeah.
Disappointing. I wanted to write in to specifically talk about the Clayne plot because this season is the main factor to the Clayne is a toxic relationship and they shouldn't be together narrative. When I fell in love with Glee, one of the main things that drew me to the show is that these characters felt so relatable to me and I felt seen by this show. However, by this point in the show, with jobs on Broadway, Vogue, record deals, and modeling contracts right after graduation, they no longer felt relatable. While I love fluffy romance just as much as the next person, I actually really liked most of the conflict that Kurt and Blaine go through this season because it felt like the only part of the show that was true to reality. Although I agree, I wish they would have more fun with the execution of these plots because it can be a little boring. My one gripe with this plot is that I wish that the resolution to this episode would have ended with Kurt suggesting Blaine talk to someone about his issues rather than fixing it with a hug and a diet. There has been countless evidence since Blaine's introduction that he's got some stuff to work on. Feeling like a coward for transferring after being hate-crimed, having tense relationships with his dad and brother, isolating himself from everyone when he was anxious about Kurt leaving, and feeling like he's lost his identity when Kurt left, and spiraling and sleeping with a random guy, the engagement, Puppet Master, New New York, I could go on and on. I just think it would have been nice to acknowledge that Blaine might need some help dealing with stuff and have him agree to talk to someone. I also think it would have been a great way to destigmatize therapy to have this happen in a somewhat casual way like this, without it as part of a big diagnosis plot like with Emma and her OCD, or without something traumatic happening like with Marty and her eating disorder. Anyway, thanks for letting me ramble. I hope you guys continue to enjoy the rest of the show. I'm getting so sad that it's almost over. So much love and consensual forehead kisses, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, I love this message. You're so right. Like, there are so many things that Blaine is going through that, like, are just fully ignored. And I think it goes back to a little bit of what Grace was saying, where Blaine was just brought in to be this character for Kurt. So they just kind of throw things at him with no thought of what that means or, like, you know, what that would, you know, do to this character or people who, like, you know, maybe identify with this character or relate to this character. Like, they just kind of, like, throw things at him. And, like, to sit down and, like you write out everything he's going through, like, this is a lot. This person needs someone to talk to. And you're so right, this could have been an awesome way to destigmatize therapy. Like, this person is, it's not shameful to go through things and to need someone to talk to, you know?
Yeah. And I especially like what you said about it being, like, a casual way to have him go to therapy, because I do think the Glee is pro therapy, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
We had Emma start seeing a therapist, mm-hmm. and it was a very positive thing. We had Marley go see a therapist, and it was a very positive thing. But also, as you mentioned, both of those were due to, like, very big, immense things happening in their life.
Yeah.
And I think that is a big attitude towards therapy, is it's like, oh, yeah, like, yeah. If I have a huge loss in my family, I'll go to therapy.
Yeah.
And also, I totally get therapy is expensive, and a lot of people either don't have insurance or don't have insurance that covers it. So it's not, like, a realistic thing for a lot of people. But I also do think that there is a portion of the population, like you mentioned, Elizabeth, that it's just, like, they have the mentality of, well, I don't have some big, enormous thing happening in my life, so, like, why would I go? And you don't realize all the little ways that, like, all the little things in your life that you're carrying with you that are affecting how you're living your life that could be helped by, like, getting some professional help and someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And this would be a great way, like you mentioned. It'd be a great way to show, like, yeah, it's Blaine isn't dealing with some huge loss. He's just feeling, you know, he's feeling some type of way about himself and about his life right now. And he's having trouble with self-worth and figuring out his place in the world. And getting help is a totally viable and great thing for him to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Shoot. Elizabeth, thank you so much for this message. Up next, we've got a message from Hayden.
Hey, guys. I don't have much to say about the actual episode other than, for whatever reason, Blaine shoving an entire cronut into his mouth and him wiping the Cheadle off his hands on his sweats has stuck in my mind ever since I saw this episode air. Is it called Cheadle?
Like, I don't know.
Like, of the Don variety?
Like, of the Don Cheadle? I'm not sure. I thought it was a typo at first.
It might be. Hold up.
Hayden, let us know. You're our
friend. I'm gonna look it up so that if it is a typo, well, I can just cut it out and replace it with what it's supposed to be. I don't think it's called the Cheadle. So I'm gonna say the glaze.
Is that what it's called on the TV show?
I don't know.
The glaze.
I'm just saying.
He's talking,
like,
about the Cheeto dust.
Oh, the Cheetos. I thought it was, like, he shoved the cronut into his mouth.
He's talking about when they're, like...
Yes, when he's eating the Cheetos in class.
Yeah.
Okay. Man, Hayden's autocorrect is a big Don Cheadle fan. They love Hotel Rwanda.
Honestly, I know I am. Don Cheadle rocks.
They said, where's War Machine's TV show? Get Iron Wars released already.
Do you think...
You announced it, like, 5 years ago.
Literally. Have they started on it?
It's been pushed back so many times.
Oh, Lord.
I don't know.
I'm sure it's not the Cheetos' fault.
It's not the Cheetos' fault. Okay, well, now that mystery is solved, let me take that again. I don't have much to say about the actual episode other than, for whatever reason, Blaine shoving an entire cronut into his mouth and him wiping the Cheetos off his hands onto his sweats has stuck in my mind ever since I saw this episode air. I really, when I read this email, I was like, Hayden's smart. Like, Hayden's a smart guy. Yeah, I guess he, like,
Cheeto.
He knows these $4 words that I don't know, that, like, the glazing on a cronut's called a Cheeto. No, he fully is talking about two separate instances. You know when you, like, eat a bunch of donuts and then you just, like, have the Cheeto all over your hands?
Oh my gosh, I hate it when the Cheeto's on my hand.
Yeah, and it's like, you can, like, lick the Cheeto off, but, like, your hands are still, like, sticky from the Cheeto. Totally. And you're like, oh, so I have to wash the Cheeto off my hands so I continue with my day. It's why I can't eat donuts in the middle of the day.
Honestly.
The
worst part of a cronut is the Cheeto.
I can't deal with the Cheeto. I'm like, what to do with the Cheeto? I'm so stupid. Okay.
You're not stupid. The Cheeto.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that tickles me.
Sorry. All you Don Cheetos fans, shout out. I love this of Don Cheetos.
Not the Cheeto. My favorite thing too, it's like the Cheeto.
You know when you eat a cronut and then Don Cheeto, high profile cronut lover, Academy Award nominee, runs in and he tries to grab the cronut out of your hand before it enters your mouth, and then you have to wipe the Cheeto off your hand. You have to say, Don, get off, I already ate it.
And then you wipe the Cheeto on your sweat.
Yeah, you wipe Don off by shoving his hand onto your sweats. You go, get off.
Oh my gosh.
Don Cheeto, this cronut's not for you. Okay.
Oh my
gosh.
That
back
really
to Hayden's
me.
Email.
You guys, we know Hayden. We can.
It also is, it was an autocorrect mistake that I just took at face value. Like.
Unless those Cheetos were Great Value brand Cheetos called Cheetles that we're not remembering.
I'll look it up.
Like, could you imagine the cheese puffs? They are actually just called Cheetles on Glee.
I'm investigating. I'm going back to that scene.
Like, Ian Brennan just is a big Don Cheadle fan. Makes sense. He's got good taste.
He does have good taste. Okay, we're getting to the Don Cheadle scene. Can you believe that Don Cheadle was in Glee on this episode in Tested?
Yeah.
How do they land that?
I don't know.
Deep into season 5? Like, oh my gosh. Did I miss it? Where is it? Oh. They're called
Cheadles.
Cheetles. They're called Cheese Curls. They're not called Cheadles. Sorry. Cheese Curls.
Rick.
They try to get Cheadles. Don tried to pay him. He said, put my name on that bag. I'm a big leak. And they said, Don, this is like the 10th time you've asked us to name an in-universe product after you. We're not doing it. In season 1, when Sandy Ryerson is selling pot under the bleachers, Don was like, can it be called Chronic Cheetle? It's called Chronic Cheetles. And they said, no, it's Chronic Lady. And Don Cheadle said, think of the alliteration. Chronic Cheadle? That's so funny. And they said, that's not alliteration. And he said, it's CH on both words, bitch. It looks like alliteration. Chronic Cheadle.
Oh my God. The way that Hayden's autocorrects Cheeto to Cheadle. That's
Hayden,
amazing.
Send us another email and let us know how often
you
are messaging
about
people
Cheadle.
About Don Cheadle.
Let us know.
How frequently do you message people about Academy Award nominee, Tony winner, Grammy winner, Emmy Award nominee, Don Cheadle?
Dude, on his way to an EGOT, Don Cheadle.
I know. He's got all the nominations for an EGOT, just not all the wins yet.
Like a lowercase EGOT.
He needs that Emmy. He needs that Oscar.
I think we
and
can
he
get
was
him.
Trying to get the Emmy for Glee. He was trying.
Damn you, Ryan Murphy.
He was like, name something after me. The Rewalk presented by Don Cheadle. Come on, anything. They said no.
Stop,
okay.
I'm not the Rewalk. I'm dead. I'm dead. Oh my God. Get to Hayden's email.
On to Hayden's email. He says, Lena mentioned the guy passing out in her sex ed class, and I thought I'd share a story. I know that at least Ian has heard this, and I would imagine Lena has too, since I told it at an SU Live where Ian was hosting. But yeah, I passed out on the first day of sex ed in 10th grade. I also had sex ed in Utah, so it's not very intense at all. Basically, it's just biology and a virginity metaphor with a stick of gum. So I'm headed to class, not excited, because not only is it the first day of sex ed, but I also hated my health teacher. Everything she said sounded like she was speaking at a testimony meeting for girls' camp or Bible camp. It got so bad, when she would finish her lessons, one of her students would go, "Amen." Luckily, we were just reading the textbook and filling out a worksheet. But we were reading the textbook out loud as a class, and the first day was the male reproductive system. This part makes me laugh, imagining us reading stuff like, the sperm goes from the testicles through the vas deferens to the urethra, and then going, "Popcorn Stephanie." At about the point someone read, "Blood goes here to form an erection," I started to not feel very good, and I could feel my blood moving away from my skin, so I put my head down. The next thing I know, my teacher is shaking my arm asking, "Are you okay? Are you okay? Do you have seizures?" I don't have seizures, so I was very confused and said no. "Do you need to go to the nurse's office?" "I'd really like to just lay here." "You need to go to the nurse's office." Evidently, I had passed out. I am then escorted to the nurse's office by two guys in my class, being held up like a scarecrow, just in case I pass out again. What I gathered was talking about blood made me pass out. Basically, all of this to say that I passed out because they said penis. I don't remember seeing any of the graphic STD symptom pictures, but I was pretty cautious about attending during that unit after that. Anyway, when I told the story at SU Live, Ian, you told the story after I did, and you mentioned penis at one point, and I overdramatically pretended to pass out. Fun times. Happy minisode to you both, Hayden. Hayden, always so good to hear from you. Every time you email in, I'm always like, I'm glad to know that he's still listening.
Yeah, honestly, me too. It makes me really happy.
It makes me very, very happy. Also, wow, what a penis-filled SU Live. They usually were not like that. I do know the exact SU Live he is referring to. It was the High School Horrors SU Live, where it was the Halloween one, and yes, everyone was supposed to tell an embarrassing story from when they were a teenager, uh-huh, or recreate an embarrassing performance. And Hayden told that story. And then I talked about, was this the one that I did this at? Where I talked about the time that I said orgasm during a Sunday school lesson because I didn't know what it meant.
I remember. Yes. Yeah. You had lots of embarrassing stories. That was awesome.
I had a lot. Good time.
I think that was also the SU Live where you pulled me backstage and you said, "Do you have like biker shorts I can borrow?" And I said, "Just the ones I'm wearing, dude. Like, you can't have these." And you were like, "I'm nervous because the shorts are kind of like open on the bottom that you're going to be able to see my penis, that you're going to be able to like see my privates." And I said to you, "If I see your penis, I'm dropping out of school."
And you graduated, so you didn't.
Word. And I never saw it.
We're fine.
Loves it. Honestly, Hayden, thank you so much for sharing this. I do remember you telling this story. And honestly, shout out to people who've passed out in their sex ed classes. You're not alone. It happens, man.
Yeah.
That's really scary.
It's a lot of information.
And it gets really clinical really fast about like blood and like things that like, you know, are, you know, crazy to young minds. I don't know.
And also,
it's
like,
pretty spooky.
When you're 14, 15, everything's embarrassing anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And then, like, your teacher is talking about genitalia.
Oh, yeah.
In front of all your peers. And you're like, I've literally never been this humiliated in my life. Mm-hmm. And they're not even talking about you specifically. But you're like, you know, I have one of those. I can't. I have to leave.
I know. Like, literally. Like, what?
Like, this
I can't have you know that I know what a maxi pad is. Oh my gosh. And that's the thing too. Hayden's so right. Like, Utah sex ed is like pretty diet sex ed. Like, it's really not anything crazy. Like,
the gum metaphor is bad. I can't believe they did the gum metaphor in school.
Oh.
For those of you
oh, yeah.
For those of you who don't know, the gum metaphor is, this is bad.
Bad.
This is not the way that society should be viewing this. So do not internalize what I'm about to say. The gum metaphor is, someone takes a stick of gum and they say, like, this stick of gum is you when you're a virgin and you haven't had sex. And then they chew the gum and they say, like, the gum can never be unchewed. Like, once you lose your virginity, you have always been chewed. And essentially, like, people aren't going to want to chew someone else's gum.
Yeah. And it's disgusting.
And I knew that, like, that, thankfully, I have no memory of that ever being said to me in church. Bless the heavens. But I have heard of plenty of people having that metaphor said to them in church. But in school?
Yeah. I never had that in school. But I remember when I got that talk in church. And I remember one of the girls in my class, like, I don't, like, she was just kind of like a rebellious girl. I don't know that she was, like, specifically doing this to, like, be, like, I don't know. But let me tell you the story. So the teacher started, like, passing out sticks of gum and then started chewing a piece of gum and then took it out and said, do you want it? And then the girl just went, yep, and took it and then started chewing it.
Good for her.
I know. So that's really incredible. Truly, like, the gum metaphor was, like, really didn't stick for me because I saw that girl do that and I was like, whatever, you know, and I remember being like, oh my gosh, she's so crazy. But, like, thank God she did that because, oh my gosh, can you believe? Wow.
Crazy.
Crazy.
Crazy times.
Crazy times.
Crazy times at Ridgemont High.
Wow. Hayden, so good to hear from you. Hayden is, like, a big time comedian in Chi-Town in Chicago.
I know, in Chicago. My gosh.
Yeah, if you guys want have to go say, follow him, I you was, should.
Hayden's whole bag is stand-up. I don't do stand-up. And I was very nervous reading that email because so much of stand-up is the delivery. And I was like, oh, man, I'm sure if Hayden was reading this, it would be so much funnier because his delivery would be better. So, yeah. Hayden, I really hope that my delivery lived up to the... to the task
there
at hand.
That I could hear were, like, in his voice. Hayden, so good to hear from you. If you ever see Hayden Cannons at a stand-up show in Chicago, you guys should go see him.
All right. Well, that's your mini-zone.
Yeah.
And here's your relative pitch game. We got Addicted Great. To Love by Robert Palmer. We got I Know Want to Know What Love Is by Amber Riley. She owns it, but by Foreigner originally. Yeah. Love is a Battlefield. By Pat Benatar. Let's Wait a While by Jeanette Jackson. And you're
I think
up
you
first.
Go first. I go
you
first?
Did the Glacks. You did the Glacks.
Oh, nice. What am I going to sing?
You're going to sing Love is a Battlefield by Pat Benatar.
Nice. We are young, heartache to heartache. We stand, no promises, no demands. Love is a battlefield. I don't know. That's what I think.
So you did a little heartache to heartache, oh, we stand. And that was the G A G F G C A.
We are young.
What is this spoken word? I hate to tell you, you're...
Frick!
What is that?
So wrong?
You're like a minor third. You're a minor third flat.
Dang.
Because you started on a G and that was an E. I'm so wrong, you're more off than that. That started on a
Freak.
D, you started on a G.
Wow, that's okay.
So... You're a fourth off. There you go.
Dang. That's fourth okay. Off. I'll get over it. I want you to sing Let's Wait a While.
Mother. let's see if I know this song. Let's wait a while. I literally don't know the rest of the
Dude,
song besides that line.
That's good.
Let's wait a while. That was a C to a D to an F to a G. Okay, so I am the one who's a minor third off because that's an E flat. Shoot. Well, shoot. We're both wrong. I think last week you were like, not to jinx myself, but I'm on a winning streak. And goodness sakes, if you didn't jinx yourself.
Wow, that's okay.
Well, next week, we're talking about opening night. It's also our 100th minisode.
Wow.
Send your thoughts to recoveringgleek@gmail.com. For the 100th minisode, as a celebration of 100 years of doing minisodes, finishing off a century strong. Send in your thoughts on opening night, please, because that's what we will actually be talking about. But also, send us some of your favorite podcast memories. We'd love to hear them. We'd love to have a moment to celebrate 100 years of minisodes.
Yeah, we can make it like an Instagram thing as well if you don't want to email us.
Yeah. Yeah, we can do a little thing in our story that we can share. It will probably be longer than most minisodes.
That's okay.
That's what it is.
Remember when we used to call our minisodes not so minisodes? We kind of dropped the not so, but
because one, it was just a lot of words, and two, we started getting them down to under an hour.
Yeah.
Which I do think this one might be over an hour. Sorry, Don Cheadle. But I do think that the minisodes should usually be under an hour.
I agree.
Because in those early days, we would talk for an hour and a half, like every time.
And we would just talk. We would just shoot the shit too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like we've gotten pretty good at less shooting the shit as time has gone on. We still shoot the shit. Well,
we still talk about Don Cheadle.
Yes. Oh, my God. You cannot keep me from the Cheeto. Thank you all so much for listening. Send us your favorite podcast memories. Send us your thoughts on opening night. Send us anything. I love to read your thoughts. Reading your emails is the highlight of my dang week. We love you so freaking much. Can't believe we're 100 years old next week. Well, here is a mini kiss on your mini freaking forehead if you accept it.
Bye.
Bye. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.